Okay, so firstly, I apologise. Apparently the aircon's not working, but we're hoping it will be soon.
Yeah,
how's
that working?
In here.
Handing over to you, EH, to pick up.
So, ready?
Don't touch the mic.
Yeah, don't touch the mic.
Well, good afternoon. This is the session right after lunch.
It's the first time to do some presentation. Well, good afternoon, all. And this afternoon, KSB will spend roughly an hour introducing and talking about what we define as a co-intangible and a statement of a co-intangible. This co-intangible and statement co-intangible was developed as part of our research and study for intangibles, actually. And SCI is a statement, but it's a new creature. It's a new product or new baby. And actually, you will be able to take a look at a sample staple, sample SCI, which is right in front of you. And we actually spent more than a year to design this SCI and to produce a sample staple. To do this, we had a team of three groups for this project. First group was professor groups, and second group was before accounting firms, and the third group was actually us, as KSB staff members. And each group had different role and responsibilities, professors working on those conceptual design of SCI. Big Four, they was actually working on those what I call product design. And the third group, KSB, was a sort of coordinator. And the three gentlemen sitting next to me, they were actually in the project. And they will spend 20 minutes each, explaining what they have done so far. And my next, Mr. Chu, is from KSB. And Mr. Lee, he's from PwC. He's a specialist for evaluation. And Mr. Chong is a professor of Chungang University, and currently he's a board member of IPSAS, actually. Yeah. So three of them will spend 20 minutes each. And before we start, I would simply say that the SCI is a new device of communication between preparers and investors. And we thought the investors are really desperate to know about intangibles, while preparers are not really ready to deliver the value of intangibles, because we thought that there is no good device to deliver the value of the intangibles. We also thought that balance sheet is not a good device to describe intangibles, because intangibles are a very different animal, very different from properties. So the balance sheet is not a good device. So that's why we decided to develop a new device, which is a statement of co-intangibles. And I would say we were sort of lucky to have one possible solution, which is the statement of co-intangibles. And why don't just let Mr. Professor Chong to start what he did to have a conceptual design of the co-intangible.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, this idea just not from me. This idea come from all of them, especially KSB, especially the chairman. We have a chance to present these ideas before coming here at December 3rd. And then we received a lot of good comment and criticism, including, I think Anthony gave us some good comment, but we have no time to revise this idea. So I just present again, and then please let me know you have good comment and insight. We will revise this project next time. My job is to present core intangible asset report. Especially, I focus on concept and design. And next slide, I will tell you the slide number. Number is a 2. This presentation consists of 2 main parts. The first part is the purpose and background of this study. I have summarized the current reporting status and limitation of intangible assets. The second part is how to improve the report of intangible asset. Our research team reviewed previous studies with a focus on the method proposed by the Austrian Accounting Standard Board and the Finance Reporting Commission in the UK. Based on these studies, we'd like to propose core intangible asset as a new concept for intangible asset reporting. The next slide shows us the number of listed company reporting intangible assets in South Korea. In 2018, we can see 96.2% of listed company report intangible asset, compared with 80.4% in the year of 1998. Nowadays, most company report intangible asset. I think these phenomena are the same all over the world. Next slide. However, the intangible asset to market capitalization ratio is only 4.76% on average from the year of 1998 to 2018. The ratio implies that intangible assets in current financial statement do not represent faithfully the economic value. So please look at the next slide. In addition, according to the Ocean Toma website, the value of intangible asset compared to the market value for S&P 500 companies increased annually, reaching 84% in 2015. I'll move to next slide number 8, because Olson idea, some people argue about this Olson's idea, so I skip the page 7 and next page 8. Academia has focused on market-to-book ratio as evidence that the intangible asset currently reported in finance statement do not faithfully represent economic value. They sometimes use market-to-book value as a measure of unrecognized intangible asset. According to prominent Professor Leff, Pitti, and Toms, the upward trend in market-to-book ratio is used as evidence of the new economy, characterized by the arrival of a new breed or a more valuable and recognized intangible asset. Here is the actual some examples, page 10. The case of Korea shows the increase in market-to-book ratio. For example, the market-to-book ratio in 1998 is less than 0.5, but the ratio in 2017 is more than 3.0. So we can move to next slide number 12. I want to emphasize Professor Lev's comment. He points out problems that arise when the economic value of intangible asset is not faithfully reflected in the final statement as follows: lack of information and unrecognized intangible asset incur social problems and damages, such as excessive capital expense on knowledge-intensive companies in infancy stage and the devaluation of intangible asset-intensive companies, for example, game industry. So our research team interviewed some major investors. Here are some notable interviews. I will present 3 interviews. First one, intangible asset play a key role in creating value of the company, but are not properly recognized. The second, the current financial statement are analyzing companies in 2018 as viewpoint of 1900s. As financial statement failed to keep up with the company's rapid changes, it is not delivered useful information to investors. Please look at the page 15. Therefore, here is our purpose. The purpose of this study is to propose a new concept and reporting method for intangible asset in order to faithfully present their economic value. In particular, we define core intangible asset. I know it is very difficult to understand this concept, but I try. Which are the key driver of corporate value, and present how to measure and how to report them. Current intangible asset standards may be inconsistent with other accounting standards in terms of definition, recognition, and valuation. There are a lot of the dispute, but first case, these discrepancies provide finance information users with insufficient information about intangible asset and mislead their making decision. For example, please look at the page 18. The definition of intangible asset requires identification. In addition to the controls and the future economic benefit required by the definition of a tangible asset. So the intangible asset standard recognized, you already know, externally purchased intangible asset, but does not recognize internally created intangible asset. Please look at the picture page 19. Blue bar represents the size of intangible asset of companies which occur business combination. The red bar represents the size of the company intangible asset that did not occur in the business combination. The blue bar, which is recognized for internally generated intangible asset due to business combinations, is significantly larger than the red bar. Moreover, the gap is increasing. This is a typical example of limitation of consistency of current intangible asset standard. So we can move to next page 21. To overcome this limitation of current intangible asset standards, ISB, FRC, and ASB have studied and present various methods, such as narrative reporting, metric reporting, cost-based model, or value-based model for intangibles. For example, based on our understanding, the ASB suggested IAS 30A cost-based models and IFRS 3 valuation-based models to recognize internally developed intangible asset, especially the IFRS 3 valuation-based models based on the hypothetical business combination has had a profound impact on our research. Cost-based models suggest to disclose total internally developed intangible asset cost and recognized cost. Management should disclose ground for capitalization. Valuation-based models propose to disclose assumption and method for determining the fair value of internally developed intangible asset. In case the assumption is changes, such changes and result shall be disclosed. Valuation-based models, total cost of internally developed intangible asset and original cost per project should be disclosed. Also, the FRC suggests three methods. First, narrative reporting, page 25. Second, metric reporting method. And next page, disclosure of expenditure on future-oriented intangibles. The idea of a future-oriented intangible also influences our research. So, page 27, there is the compared pictures. Compared with these studies, our approach is the most financial and long-term measures. Next page, 30. The purpose of our approach is the value of intangible asset, which is not recognized in the current balance sheet, shall be reported with the same level of importance as other assets, such as tangible asset, on the balance sheet. The approach consists of three steps. First, defining of a new concept of core intangibles, which is the main driver of a company's value. Second, measuring fair value of core intangible asset in monetary terms. Third, presenting and disclosing core intangible asset on a separate report. Page 31, here is our definition of core intangible asset. We define that core intangible asset are intangible factors that are important to an entity in its creation of value, whether or not they are secured by legal means and whether or not they meet the current definition of asset. So our present is called as a third way. The good news is emerging an acquisition practice, the identification of practice of core intangible asset have already been established by industry. The most important characteristic of core intangible asset is intangibles associated with the main operation activities that continue to generate excess profit for the company. In the past, tangible asset primarily generate excess profit, like a PPE, but in today's knowledge-based economy, intangible asset generate major excess profit. Therefore, the information is omitted or misrepresented. It affects information users making decision. Page 33. According to new definition of core intangible asset, core intangible asset can be first existing identifiable intangible asset, such as software and licenses. In addition, it can be synergies of identifiable asset or internally developed intangibles, which were not reported in financial statement. Page 3-4, core intangible asset of a reporting company may be more than one. They vary, depends on the characteristic of the company or industry. You can see some examples on the page 3-4. I focus on web-based company. Web-based companies such as Google or Yahoo or Facebook. The software already reported in the final statement may be core intangible asset. Also, the website platform, which is a synergy of identified asset that have not been reported in the final statement so far, could be a core intangible asset. Or an internally developed technology that was not reported in the final statement could be also a core intangible asset. So, next page, we try to explain about measurement. Core intangible assets are measured at fair value on initial recognition and continue to be evaluated as fair value. Specifically, core intangible assets are measured as valued as the present discount value of future net cash inflows. Our research team presented two methodologies commonly used in M&A practice. First one, multi-period excess earning method. Second, relief from royalty method. Those measurement methods will be explained in detail with actual example in the following presentation. Okay, so finally, our research team proposed to report core intangible asset separated from finance statement. The separate report on core intangible asset should be encouraged to be voluntary at first. The report is consist of a disclaimer, the core intangible asset summary, general principles, main assumptions, evaluation details. In particular, the reporting of core intangible asset should be comparable by reporting not only the current years, but also the previous 2 years. Next, page 3-8, there are examples of core intangible report. So you can see the last three pages. First, 3.8, you can see statement or intangible asset, and next is a disclaimer, and page 3.9, the core intangible asset summary, and then general principles. The page 40, that is the last page, there are main assumptions like a discount or the intangible asset valuation method. And then the final evaluation details, that is our examples. You already see where some statement, let me see, statement of core intangibles. So this concludes my presentation and first, and thank you for your listening.
We pause for questions here. What do you think? Or shall we have the three presentations?
Well, if you wish, you can ask a couple of questions because it has been very speedy. So probably you have questions.
Example.
When you propose this statement of core intangible assets, it's not explaining a balance which is actually accounted for on the statement of financial position. I mean, this variation in intangible assets are not recognized in the first place. It's completely independent, like a disclosure matter.
It's separate. Okay. It's a snapshot of, at the end of each period. It could be an annual basis. Okay. It could be a, quarterly basis.
Okay. My point here is without getting to the merit of if you should do it or not, I don't like the justification here, that there is inconsistency. Because inconsistency is the same argument to do it and for not to do it. So because I could answer let's get rid of the inconsistency. Let's not recognize even acquired goodwill or acquired intangibles. So inconsistency is not an argument to recognize intangible assets, really.
Actually, there are a lot of argument about the inconsistency or consistency.
No, I understand the other argument. I think that this argument is very important in the paper. It's argument that goes in both ways. So it's not a good argument for that discussion, from a methodological point of view.
Okay.
Patrick.
Thank you for this first phase of your presentation. I wanted a clarification, and I wanted to share a reaction. The clarification is, would the definition of the core intangible assets differ from one company to the other, or should they be the same on for one sector, which is my question. I have another question, and would everything be quantified? In other words, do you translate this into monetary items, or do you have other measurements? And the reaction is, yes, it's a way that is people insist too much on risks and not enough on intangibles in the current level of criticism of financial information. So I think it's important to develop a non-financial element which is separate from the financial statements. Now the real positioning of the report is important. Do you see it as part of the financial information, or do you see it as totally separate in format, but also separate in concept, in terms of approval, external audit, and things like that? If you can give me some clarification, thank you.
Some of them may back up. If you raised three different questions, and if I try to answer the question for the last thing, the status of this statement, the positioning. We think this should, if this is a good statement, this should stand as a very independent, very separate from finance, current finance reporting. And we can think of this statement is actually voluntary declaration of management. Management say that based on a couple of assumptions, based on the methodology of cash inflow and cash outflow, we have computed, we have put values on our major intangible. And you know, this is a voluntary statement, and it will stay as an independent statement for like 5 years, 10 years. Then if this becomes a very useful tool to demonstrate the value of the company, then management commentary, we'll be able to pick up the numbers from this statement of co-intangibles, or the footnote will be able to use some numbers in this statement. But if it is a really good tool in the future, then it could constitute part of the statement itself, could be part of the notes, or it could be part of finance statements. For instance, number one, profit and loss. Number two, balance sheet. Number three, statement of intangible. That's what we have been thinking, whether this is realistic or not. And in terms of the question about the definition of co-intangible, I would say the definition of co-intangible will be the same thing, because this is what industry we are representing. So it's the same thing. But the important thing is how we figure out major intangible, which is co-intangible, in the industry. For instance, pharmaceutical company may have unique.
But all pharmaceutical companies would have the same number and categories of core intangibles, and the metrics would be the same for everybody, or would it be specific to each and every company?
Yes, that's what I believe. It may change, but
specific. Yes. Specific or common?
Actually, I would say common. For instance, if you look at this statement, this is a statement, sample statement, which was calculated and prepared for a, I would say, online game company. In Korea, we have like five or six very big online game company whose market value is something like $3 billion U.S. dollars, while they have virtually nothing, tangible assets. They don't have any office building. They don't have any factory at all. The only thing they have is a couple of games on hand. And because the game is an intangible asset, there's no way we can use a balance sheet to present the value of the intangible. So we try to capture the value, monetary value of those games, which was stated as a
would the five report along the same lines with the five companies?
Yes.
In your view, or
yes,
would
right.
each and every company decide on what is important for? Some might say it is the software that is the value. The other one could say it's in fact the human capital that I have gathered.
Yes.
So it would be.
Yes, same for specific industry. So when we prepared this statement, we were thinking about online game industry. But if you look at online game industry, there are two different games. One is mobile game. The other is internet online games. The character is a little bit different. But we thought that the way we can identify the co-intangible is same regardless of whether it's a mobile game or internet game. So it's a matter of how you define industry. For instance, we were thinking about do the same exercise for pharmaceutical company. And if you look at pharmaceutical company, their intangible is obviously the couple of different products, pharmaceutical products, which is not really a tangible asset. But the value of each product, each pharmaceutical product is something we can catch as a co-intention.
All of them translated into monetary
yes,
amounts.
Yes,
I was going to ask something that sort of builds on Patrick's question, if that's all right. So, but just to understand, is the idea that there's a definition of core and tangible assets, and then a company will look at that definition and decide which intangibles it might have that meet the definition?
Yes, that's.
And then there'd be no further specificity. So the expectation might be that somebody within the same industry would come to the same conclusions,
yeah.
But it's because of the way the definition's applied as opposed to it being listed per se.
Yeah.
Is that the idea?
Yeah. One of our research, one of the purpose of our research to improve the communication between preparers and investors. So investors already know what is the major core intangible into the some industry. For example, the airline company. Most investors want to know the value of airline route. So it depends on the airline route. The value of airline companies increase or decrease. So chairman already told us the definition of core intangible should be commonly to be used among the investors, but in the specific company, maybe they can choose different core intangible asset, but the investor does not agree with that. That is another information to the investors. Why they choose another intangible asset, that can be some queries, that can be some problems. So investor don't want to invest in this company.
I think
then
we are ready for the second presentation.
Right. Actually, I had a bad cold right now, so my voice is a bit gone, but I try to give a best shot. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Wang Hee Lee. I am a valuation professional at PwC Korea. I typically provide a valuation service to Korean and international clients for M&A transaction, as well as financial reporting purposes. First of all, it is an honor for me to have this opportunity to present our statements of core intangibles. Last Friday, there was an interesting news in Korea that Delivery Hero, which is the German-based online food delivery company, acquired a one Korean company at a enterprise value of $4 billion. The interesting fact that it did not release is that the net asset of the target company in Korea was only $300 million US dollars, which means that implied transaction price book ratio is more than 16 times. As a valuation practitioner, we have a fear that it's really harder and harder to define what is really driving the value of the company, because important factor does not represent on its balance sheet. It has been an enlightening task to collaborate with KASB and Professor Zhang's team to build up an example of a report for core intangibles. As you are aware, there are already various methodologies to value the intangible assets in the market. In particular, according to IFRS 3 business combination, valuation practitioners typically conduct a purchase price allocation, so-called PPA, when a certain company acquires or merges with another one. And as part of the PPA exercise, we perform a valuation for intangible assets such as customer relationships, developed technology, trade names, and so on. We thought it would be helpful for the company to approach valuing core intangibles from the PPA concept, given people have already familiarity with it in the practice. In this regard, we concluded that each company will be able to identify and quantify the value of the core intangibles within the entity. based on a hypothetical business combination, whereby the entity is assumed to be an acquiree as opposed to an acquirer as of the valuation date or reporting date. When it comes to the industry where the subject company operates in the report, we intentionally selected a game industry, which is assumed for the market participants to have a high portion of intangibles. For example, industry price book ratio, PBR, for game companies in Korea is currently around 5 times on average, which implies the book itself would not represent important assets to drive the value of the company. We also consider the fact that the South Korea is the fourth largest mobile game market in the world. This led us to have much experience on the game industry and access to the various source data. Section 1 of the report shows the exact summary. So if you take a look at page 11 of the report, in this example of the report, we identified and quantified 4 games and the corporate training as core intangibles of the subject company. These are Batman Begins, which has already been released in the market, and then 3 games scheduled to be in service: Batman Returns, Amazing Spider-Man, and Avengers Endgame. We intentionally borrowed the names of Hollywood movies to make them sound real. On the other hand, we actually used the real data of a certain company operating in Korea, while we made a tweak to the numbers and redacted the details due to confidentiality issues. A total value of the games identified and valued was 20.8 billion Korean won, which is almost 20.8 million US dollars. And this turns out to be more than 50% of the enterprise value of the company. Section 2 of our report represents general assumptions applied in valuing the core intangibles. If you take a look at page 15 of the report, we have summarized the valuation methodologies used in this report. As you might be aware, the multi-period excess earnings method is widely used when you perform a intangible asset, when we perform a valuation for the primary intangible asset in a PPA exercise. The underlying thought on this method is an intangible asset fair value is equal to the present value of the incremental after-tax cash flows, which are excess earnings attributable solely to the intangible asset. The value of 4 games were estimated using the excess earnings method. In addition, relief from royalty method is commonly used for measuring the fair value of trade names or brands in the practice. The fundamental concept underlying this method is the owner of the trade names or brands can obtain comparable rights to use the subject asset via a license from a hypothetical third-party owner. We applied the relief from royalty method in valuing the company's corporate trade name. On the next slide, we represent a discount rate applied in the analysis. Discount rate is one of the most important inputs to determine the value of core intangibles. An appropriate discount rate should be applied to reflect the risk of the projected cash flows attributable to the core intangibles. To calculate the base weighted average cost of capital, which is the WACC for the company, the most commonly used capital asset pricing model, so-called CAPM, is applied. And then Additional risk premium was added to the WACC for the games scheduled to be in service in order to reflect the uncertainties within the pre-commercial nature of the games. So next section. Section 3 of the report shows the exhibit of each game valued, including detailed future cash flows attributable solely to individual games, and covers primary inputs and assumptions for the projection. I will explain with a focus on the game Batman Returns for the game to save time. You can see the projection on page 22 of the report and major assumptions on page 23. The analysis is performed as of December 31st, 2018, which is the valuation date. Management was expecting to release the game in 2019 in order to build up the projection, sales, service period, and operating margin attributable solely to the game Batman Returns were forecasted for the purpose of valuation. Specifically, the future sales of Batman Returns is estimated based on the requirement development period, the number of development personnel, and the result of K-data analysis. The real name of this paid database is App Annie. This is a widely referred to by mobile game companies to forecast its sales for new games under development. App Annie basically provides the level of peak sales by game genre, grade, region, and more importantly, the monthly sales decreasing rate, such as attrition rate, after the launch of the benchmark games. You can see the detailed data in the appendix. The service period is assumed to be 55 months, giving consideration to the average period of mobile games similar in genre. Based on after-tax earnings, contributory asset charges are deducted to obtain the excess earnings attributable to the core intangibles. And then future cash flows were discounted back at 17.8%, which is in line with the risks of the projection of the game Batman Returns. As a result, the estimated fair value of the game Batman Returns was 11.4 billion Korean won. You can also check out the details for other games buried in the report. Separately, if you turn your attention to page 28 of the report, other than the games buried, we also identified trade name of the company as one of the core intangibles. The value of trade name was estimated using the relief from royalty method, as I mentioned before. It is assumed that all the sales generated from the company's games will be branded with the company's trade name moving forward. Also, 10 years of economic useful life for the trade name is assumed to extend the projection. Last but not least, the royalty rate of 2% was selected to calculate the royalty savings based on third-party license agreements and perceived brand awareness of the company. As a result, the fair value of the trade name is estimated to 1.3 billion Korean won. I think that brings us to the end of the presentation. As mentioned in the beginning, we have applied a hypothetical purchase price allocation concept to value the core intangibles in the analysis. It is simply because, as a valuation practitioner, we always do the valuation on the intangible assets within not only the context of business combination, but also for trading or financing purposes. However, we understand that there could be a challenge to define and identify what are the core intangibles of the company. also mapping out the future cash flows for each core intangible is a practical issue we need to spend more time on in the future. Nevertheless, we hope that this report will facilitate the discussion for effective financial reporting on intangibles in the age when we talk about the first industrial revolution. Thank you very much.
Okay. Any questions at this point?
Okay, if I back up, what Mr. Lee is doing every day in his office is the valuation. And he's doing two different valuations. One is valuation for M&A transactions. So whenever, and particularly he's like an online game specialist. So he has his friends in this in the office, like a pharmaceutical specialist, valuation specialist, and has a game industry specialist, you know, diverse.
So would this project perhaps put him out of business?
And he also, he's very much working on the impairment test, because auditors, they would like to check whether there's any impairment for the acquired goodwill. So he's working very much on those impairment. And so he says that in the M&A transaction, regardless of what company, the first step before the valuation is to figure out what is the core intangible. That's the thing. What they do. So as long as they find out a core intangible, then they will. Forecast the cash inflow, they will forecast the cash outflow expenses, then they compute the value of those that a company is like a corporate value. The difference between his everyday job, like valuation of M&A transaction, and this core intangible statement is when they do the M&A transaction, they compute the value of the whole company. And this exercise, they separate intangible assets by one by one. So that's the only difference. And this is a kind of new exercise even for Mr. Lee.
Okay. Any questions?
Then let's move to Mr. Zhu.
Yes. The last part is the concern relating to our proposal. Yeah, I noted that you have many concern and ambiguity relating to our proposal. So hopefully my presentation will address your concern to some extent. In the way of gathering the feedback on our proposal, we've been conducting the outreach activities, including the presentation of this proposal at our CASB 20th anniversary seminar, which was held in September this year, and the presentation in IFAS October this year. And most recently, with the actual sample statement or core intangible in the AFRAX consultative meeting this month. Through this event, we could receive some comments, mostly concern. The main issues included in this section. There are four areas. The first one is fair value, the reliability issue, and the next one is scope of accounting, and third one is a company's ability to prepare the statement of core intangible. The last one is an audit issue. The first one is a reliability of a fair value measurement, and as you all know, it is a very common issue, not only for our proposal, but in the most general valuation practice. And yeah, even if we know that there's a much concern, like you have, and actually we can see some limitation in preparing of the statement core intangible, especially in the fair value measurements of intangible. But still, we cannot help concluding that it will be the only way of financial reporting of intangible after all. And in my personal opinion, given the importance of the intangible and the growing importance of the intangible in the future, the disclosure of some information relating to the intangible, and cost information, cost classification information can be a temporary solution to address the concern. But after all, in the end, the valuation of the intangible asset will be the only solution to address all the problem relating to the intangible information. Fair value is intuitive and comparable and relevant. And some people said due to the difficulty in measurement and fluctuation in value of intangible, due to these factors, the fair value measurement is not a necessary solution. But we don't think it can be a reason for not measuring core intangible at fair value. It's for us, it's just a challenge to overcome. As a factor to damage the reliability of fair value measurement of core intangible, they said the subjectivity and the measurement inducement to overstatements. We also think about the possible solution to address this concern. First, subjectivity issue, the standardization based on industry practice, and giving some the provision of the guidance by industry can reinforce the objectivity to some extent. And as for the management inducement for overestimation, we think the comparative presentation can be very powerful tool. The entity can lie about their results of valuation of core intangible in a certain year, but as time goes, the market verify the previous figures presented in the comparative formats, and the market start to give a credit to companies' result of the valuation. So by this market mechanism, it is becoming harder for company to lie or exaggerate their result of the intangible the asset valuation. And second issue is the scope of accounting. Many can criticize PESB's proposal saying that the valuation is not accounting. But as you know, the estimation and valuation is already in IFRS. If you look at the slide, there is the pyramid, right-hand side, there is a pyramid. That is what we think the accounting will be. The old form of accounting is a simply double accounting system, but it started to using the estimation to produce more useful information like the depreciation. And IFRS adopted the fair value concept to various areas, mostly in the tangible asset and financial instruments. And given that the intangible will be the everything in major company in the future, we believe the next step is a fair value of the intangible for financial statement to provide the useful information. And secondly, the last October in IFAS meeting in London, someone said the valuation is a job of investors, not a preparer. And similarly, the FRAX consultative forum in this month, many things that the information included in our the statement of core intangible can be regarded as useful, but they are not sure whether the company needs to report the output, the result of their valuation. But we think the general purpose financial statement should be prepared for all types of investor, not only for the institutional one, which has relevant resources to do that. And by requiring the company to report the result of their valuation, I think the input information, including the general assumptions, things like that, can be more clearly communicated to the users. And again, our proposal is not valuing the company as a whole, which is a job of the professional investor. We are saying that accounting should include the most important information in order to remain relevant. So in that respect, we believe that despite of the much difficulties, we should start to incorporate the fair value measurement of intangible in the financial reporting. The third area is feasibility from preparer side. We know that The concern on the leakage of the confidential information in preparing, in the way of preparing the statement of core intangible, the information in this statement is so informative and sometimes relating to the confidential item, the entity might be reluctant to provide such information. Nonetheless, there are factors to encourage people to prepare this statement. For example, the startup, which want to be valued properly, even if they have not reported the revenue yet. And for some company, save their cost for company investor relationship activities by providing this statement. And in our 20th anniversary seminar, one person from the company said that he didn't think the company has no ability to prepare the statement of core intangibles. In a way of making our sample statements, we learned. It is true, the company needs a substantial level of relevant skill set, and it needs also cost for preparing the statement. But we think there are same situation in the preparation of the financial statement before. Decades ago in Korea, the preparation of the cash flow statement was auditor's work in many local companies. But as time goes, the entities started to invest their resources and spend their money as financial information become important. I think the same thing can happen in preparation of the statement of core intangible in the future. The last one is the audit issue, and many ask a question, how can it be audited? The statement, can it be audited? In order to be free from the audit issue, we propose the separate statement, which is outside audit. And besides the separate formats, other voluntary non-audited documents can be a place to contain such information. Like our chairman said, management commentary can be an option. In the long term, as the user in the market find this information useful, then the ISB and national standard setting bodies can consider including the information stated in the statement core intangible in the financial statement set, starting from in the notes to eventually the face of the financial statement. And lastly, we'd like to share our plan. Our original intention to kick off this project was stimulate the discussion in financial reporting of intangible assets, and we developed our idea and made a sample report. And with this output, we are gathering the feedback on our report domestically and internationally together with the other NSS. And we plan to continue our research by preparing this kind of statements in other industry, other than game industry, the bio, entertainment industry, pharmaceutical industry, and whether we will see whether it is still useful, it can provide the useful information or not. And to see whether the statement of core intangible is found useful by users. Also, the following the progress of relating the ISB's work, such as the management commentary and the extractive activities, because we will share our result of our research at a proper time. Yeah, this is the end of our presentation. Thank you.
This is it, and I took this. There is a sort of a first step, work from our end, and presently we have a plan to, talk to the market, investors and preparers, and whether this provides any useful information to the investors, and we would like to check whether the company preparers will be able to produce this type of statement for the investors. And obviously, we have to check with the preparers, companies, whether they have a willingness to provide such a confidential information to the investors. So it very much depends upon the company and the industry. So, but we have to check whether this is a sort of animal which will be, used in the market. And if it is useful, then we would like to, do some additional work. And obviously, the most, immediate plan is that we did some exercise with one online game company, but we would like to expand the same exercise to other industry, for instance, pharmaceutical company, or we have been talking about extractive industry, because if you look at the mining company, energies and mining resources, it could be interpreted as tangible, but it could be interpreted as intangible assets. If it is treated as a right itself, it's not a tangible property, then this could be a way to put value on those mining rights. So we plan to do some exercise with different industry.
I could imagine that. Well, first of all, I thank you for the hard work that you have done, and it is intellectually very interesting. Will also be of use of our management commentary practice statement. And it's very courageous work.
Yes. Ambitious.
If this were to happen, that would be a new frontier in reporting. But I could imagine that that there are a couple of issues. First of all, in a situation of acquisition, then at least you have two parties with conflicting interests.
Yes.
Which puts, a boundary on reporting slipping into fantasy. I could also imagine that apart from the issue of confidentiality, also the cost of these exercises would be quite large, if you take it seriously. And would the company be ready to do this when they have absolutely no intention to sell or to acquire, would they be willing to invest in such a process and do it on a yearly basis or quarterly basis, measuring assets that are highly volatile, that are very much dependent on market expectations? I could imagine that that will be a struggle to get all the preparers on your side for this project.
And we have been in touch with a couple of startup companies. The size is huge. They are losing money in terms of their profit and loss statement. However, investors know that the company has a value, so they continue to invest in the company. So from the company's viewpoint, they have to show something to the investors, because if they will be able to show that we have whatever value in our company, then it's going to be worthwhile to give some kind of comfort to the investors and even to the creditors like banks. So I think
in these circumstances, wishful thinking is an extreme risk.
Yeah, of course,
because they have an incentive; they want to be. Perhaps you have an IPO, and we've seen a whole recent series of IPOs where loss-making companies first made huge multiples, but it's getting more and more difficult in the market. So there is a huge incentive for visual thinking. Patrick?
I would like to share a couple of reactions. Thank you for the brave move forward. I am a great believer in non-financial information, and in that category I put information that can be derived from the accounting systems, but that is not necessary for financial information per se. Mm-hmm. So I, to a certain extent, I suggest to consider the idea of what I call in a report which I produced the second leg.
Second leg.
Yeah. Today we have one leg, which is the financial information, mm-hmm. but we are a little limping or hopping because we are missing the non-financial information leg, which includes topics like intangibles. So before mixing the two legs, I am very careful, because I believe that part of the information that you are trying to deliver, and quite rightly so, might not always translate into monetary items that are reliable enough. Mm-hmm. In other words, you can predict cash flows, but it's not easy to say that element is going to produce that cash flow. In certain entities, maybe, but in others, it will be very, very difficult. There is one more remark which I wanted to make, is that generally speaking, you know, we are confronted with a dilemma. You are working on the difference between book value and market cap. That's for sure. And the gap is increasing in the development of an intangible economy. So I agree to that. On the other hand, you have a number of people that are saying book value might be overestimated, at least for two reasons. Some people believe that acquired goodwill should be amortized, which would increase further the gap. But that's funny. And also that you have externalities, risks, that are not yet properly taken into account. So in my view, you should maybe consider how to reconcile the negatives, the externalities that are existing over companies, because if you give only the positives, you will rebalance too much on the other side, if I may say so. So may I suggest that we have a further discussion and that you have a look at the report I produced on this topic.
Nick?
Thank you. So, the presentation, I think it's a very welcome contribution to this debate. There are a couple of things that I like about it. So one is that it's not dependent on a conceptual framework definition of an asset, that you have flexibility to go beyond that. And secondly, because the statement is outside the boundaries of financial statements, statement of core intangibles, those fair value changes that we've been troubled by this morning going through the P&L don't trouble the P&L because it's a separate statement.
They go in limbo.
Doesn't it? But I think the key going forward, and it's in some respects leads on from Patrick's remarks, is really, and you had it in your towards the end of your final presentation, is understanding we need more evidence that investors would find these numbers useful. That's where we need the evidence.
Yep.
And what I'd say is that I never have a conversation amongst investors about the discrepancy between market value and book value. They have no interest in that. The only time I discuss that is with accountants. Yep. And so we have to be, the market isn't troubled by that difference at all. And so I think that's closing that is a dream we don't need to be fighting to or having. It's not something the market worries about. And I guess I take that one step further, and we talked about the valuation process through business combinations, and particularly the PPA process. Mm-hmm. Again, this may be a point you can follow up on. I see very little evidence that people use the values that come out of that PPA process in their investment decision making. And I think if you can find that evidence, that would be supportive of this approach. I'm just trying to think of ways to take this forward. I think, and the last thing I'd say is that when you ask investors, do you think this would be helpful, you have to make sure, or they will always say yes, without thinking about the cost, of course, as well. So it's an important cost-benefit equation that needs to be thought of, I think. Thank you.
Alexander. First of all, thank you for this work is amazing, how detailed it's done. But I'd make a disclaimer here. I'm a good field test for you, because I'm extremely skeptical about putting intangibles on financial statements anywhere. And I don't think that anything good came out of the internet bubbles in 2001, WeWork example now. Every time that we get, we distance ourselves from the good and old accounting earnings, we end up with trouble. At least this, the overwhelming majority of the cases, we. So I'm quite skeptical about it. So my comment is good for you to test your assumptions. And I'd like to go to page 13 here on your which some sort of related to what Nick said about price to book ratios or market to book ratios. So if you do this calculation here, because there are two views here, there's a Stephen Penman kind of view that accounting should be an anchor to value. There is more of a Baruch Levy view that accounting should represent value, which is a different story. So you come out, you start with very different assumptions. So if I go in the first assumption, which accounting should be an anchor to derive value, I'm not bothered at all with price to book of 6, 7, or 12, because it is how it is to be done. If I believe that accounting should represent the company's value, then I'll be bothered with that difference. For me, it's an important starting point. If you look at this calculation here, you're pretty much getting awesome model here, getting book value plus abnormal earnings. Is that cool? But this is actually company valuation in the first place. Mm-hmm. But, my point is, the market will be doing that all the time. So. And getting me that information on a more timely basis than this report. So my view is, what good can a company estimate of its own value do? Because it's extremely biased. You know what I mean? Market is going to give me that information. If the model is properly performed, properly done, you should get very close to the market valuation of a company, which is information that I already have. I just look at the Bloomberg's information here. And I have forecasts, and I have forecast of price to book, forecast of price to earnings. I already have that information here. So my comment here is, should I really pay attention to this? Because companies already give earnings guidance on all the sort of information which people tend to be very skeptical about it, because of course, as Hans said, it's very biased. But now I'm asking the management to give me the value of the company, which is, I don't know if this information is useful in the first place. And just one another issue is, I prefer the more conservative explanation of the business model, which is already in the management comment, and how I do create value, than because it concerns me a lot what you said about companies that are not making money at all and they need a way out. So I'm giving a way out to companies that actually are not making money at all. And you know that 99% of the cases, companies that are not making money at all will not make money at all. The exceptions are those companies that actually end up transforming this view. So I think this is two elements. So is this information really useful on top of the information that we already have? A second, how do you treat the bias here? Because for me, the bias is fundamentally embedded in this discussion.
Well, let me talk briefly. So in terms of price-book ratio issues in the market, I partly agree that no investors are interested in the price gap between book and market capitalization. But when in the age when it soars to 15, even 20, this must be a problem on our balance sheet. That's the issue we started our conversation.
Why is there a problem? Sorry.
Important asset is missing on the balance sheet. So we are not suggesting that the book value should be equal to the market value. But if the,
how much should it be?
It is arguable.
It's too much because there is a range that we accept. So I mean, it's very hard to get to the range.
But if we define the balance sheet should represent its assets and liabilities, and then market think that important something is not sitting on the balance sheet, is it really a balance sheet? That's the starting point we started our project. So, two times, three times, it can be, but 15 times, 20 times, well.
Sorry to be such a pain, but I think it's important for you to address this question. So there is something which is in the market price, just it's a present value of future revenues. It should not be on the accounting, on the balance sheet. The market is pricing the future value of future earnings. It's future by nature. It is future. So I expect this company to grow by 15% a year for the next 10 years. That's going to be on the price. But should that be on the balance? So no.
Yes, I agree. And a second point is that we focus on the comparability between the company which is acquired and the company who just has the internally generated intangible assets. If such a company is acquired by another one, that have a significant portion of goodwill, which will be equal to the market value.
Get rid of both.
it can be, but...
Get rid of both.
the startup companies, they often go through the M&A transaction, and with the company who have gone through any M&A transaction but have a significant potential to grow due to the intangible asset they had, which is the case I referred at the first of my speech, the delivery service company in Korea. So, we are not saying that this exercise should be done in, current age, but when you think about the, 5 years later, 10 years later, the gap would be increased significantly.
Okay. As Hans indicated, this is a very ambitious and brave exercise, but the reason why this is brave is because we do not plan to have something happens in near future, but we are thinking about like in 10 years, 20 years, definitely most of the companies requiring investment is like intangible companies, so probably at that point of time, everybody would like to really look at intangible value. And what Alexander's comment, this may not be the answers, but the difference between the value of the company itself, market is exercising, and between that and this is, as I said, it goes by different unit. Co-intangible, what you call, is a cash-generating type of unit. So when you look at corporate valuation, it's like integrated whole company. But this is separate, valuation for separate intangibles, which will give more information to the market. Obviously, the numbers will be different, but you can. The investor will be able to use the value itself. At the same time, they will be able to look at the, assumptions and backup numbers. That could be a very useful information. That's why we can think of providing this type of statement, which will give separate information to the investors.
I think one suggestion would be to ask investors, because at least I may be biased, but I never get that question from investors asking me, what's the intangible value of your client portfolio, for example? Maybe I'm biased, but I haven't seen this.
You're one of the few industries where actually the balance sheet does say something about the value of it.
Yeah, maybe. So maybe I'm biased, yeah.
And on the comments of Nick, It's true that investors and market is not really interested in the difference between book value and corporate value. I think the reason may be because they don't really look at balance sheet. They simply try to, very much look at profit and loss statement.
Cash flows.
But, the cash flows. But they don't really look at balance sheet at all, particularly for the company who has a huge amount of market value, while the book value is really nothing.
I think you're getting to the point that I want to make. If this is going to progress, you've got to really think what's the relevance of this. And the relevant, and there's too much assumption going on about what is relevant, that value is relevant, that and why. So as Nick said, if you were to ask investors, did they want this, they'd probably say yes until you told them how much it cost. But actually what I'd asked them before I told them the cost was, why do you want it? What use would this be to you? Now we have a set of working assumptions about for financial reporting what investors are doing, and we tend to assume it's to predict cash flows. This seems to me a really convoluted way. You start with the answer, here are the future cash flows I expect, and then you go through a whole process of calculating, and you come back to a value. They go, okay, well, forget all that, but can I just see that date sheet again? That's the only piece of this they would want, would be your predictions of your future cash flows so they can hold you to account for your own forecast. No company's going to provide that. That's the one bit of this that stands out as of huge value. But no company...
Yes, owner's guidance should be a proxy for that.
Yeah, well, exactly. But the company isn't going to say itself, these are my predictions of my cash flows, and if I don't make it, you can sack. No, I'm not going to give. I'm not going to give you that level of detail. So all of the useful information. So they would take a. If there's any use to an asset valuation, it's because it must be saying something about the predictability of cash flows, or a business model where they're going to sell it off separately. Then a current value might be relevant. Well, this is an asset they'll be using. The value is useless to them. What they're interested in is the cash flows it would generate, but also the other bit that's complete, well, that would be missing in this. But by taking it out of the financial statements, you're missing the performance measures relating to it. And I think the big data set that's missing it, okay, and what's it going to cost to replace that? What's going to be your ongoing expenditure investing in future intangibles or maintaining the current ones? Because if you don't get those right, you've got no future. So I think trying to classify, trying to open up, trying to say the need to provide granular detail on what the intangibles are, I think it's all really powerful stuff. But I think as you take it forward, I think you want to be thinking about the relevance and really ask the question, what would an investor do with this? Because if there's nothing he can do with it other than take your number, I don't think it's really adding to his data set.
Anne?
I've been thinking about what your way forward is with your work. So like everybody else, congratulations and thank you for doing this, because we've talked about a gender consultation today, the idea that people are going to propose something in the intangibles area. So it's great to have this on the table. So I was thinking about extractive activities, because you mentioned that. And we know that there's some really important information. It's outside financial statements. It's not audited. And what is that information? It's not the future cash flows. It's the resources and the reserves. So there's a couple of things about that. It's key information that the investors use. They definitely want it, and then they work with it, and they produce their estimates to the future cash flows. And it's also provided by a competent person. So to the first point, is there something you can think about, and it follows on from other comments, and Anthony's and others, is there something you can think about in terms of what is it in this set of information that is the information the investors want, the base information that they want to work with? So when I think about investor presentations, a lot of these type of companies use their investor presentations and provide information in that media that is then used. So I would think about that. I would think about this whole idea of what information will be useful and how they're going to use it, and how that fits in with what you're doing, thinking maybe as extractives as a model. And the other bit was the competent person. So that's about providing the credibility.
Yeah.
So, you know, what are the constraints when people make investor presentations and they've got forward-looking information in there? What are the mechanisms that are used to give that credibility? So there's constraints over misleading the market, that type of legislation that stops people from just doing pie-in-the-sky numbers, the litigation risk going forward. I would think about the other side to this. I would think about how people would demonstrate credibility and then what is your contribution in that area such that a regulator could say, I'm going to use those ideas and build it into the framework that we've got. So just some thoughts for you going forward.
Okay.
Rieko.
I would like to share some two suggestions from AOSSG. For the new definition of core intangible assets, the definition seems to have new terms. For example, excess profits and value creation. It was suggested to have some guidance on the new terms to enable comparability. And for the report, it was suggested to have some discussion on risks or opportunities, and some sensitivity analysis.
Thank you.
Ellie?
So I would echo, I think, a lot of the comments as I was hearing the comments that Anthony had raised. But I do think there is an opportunity to here to think more broadly as you're doing and encouraging with this. So I congratulate you for that. To think more broadly about how an entity might, report on its in different ways its value creation activities. And I think that is information that we should be trying to convey in different ways. But as we were talking about this morning, I think it's beyond just about measurement per se. I think we can think about, for example, to your point, being able to provide more information or more transparent information about research and development activities. Because what you're reflecting on here is an asset that you've essentially already developed in a way. And so what are your R&D activities, to think about, what's the next product that's being developed, that would be information that an investor would find useful around information like advertising expenses, so how you're enhancing brand value through those activities and employee training and so on, so to stay relevant. I also did notice on here, for example, you mentioned it was on page 3, one of the principles, that there was an asset or something that was identified as a core intangible, but no information is being provided with respect to that because being able to measure it, it's not reliably measurable. So then to that point, is there disclosures or other information that you could provide about that core intangible? So you've identified it as a core intangible, but aren't providing the investor with information about it. So is there something to be asking the investor to the extent that we have something that we've identified as a core intangible, but we can't reliably measure it, is there some other type of disclosure that they would find or information about that they would find useful then in that case?
Okay. EH, not to chew on, I think.
May I quickly comment? It's Chiara.
Chiara, yes.
Yes, no, just to confirm that this topic is relevant also from our perspective, and the team that did the presentation today was with us at the beginning of the month, presented at our consultative forum of standard setter. So that provided us a fruit for thoughts of the next phase of our project activities. And the initial reactions of the members were very much aligned with what we are hearing now, and for sure set the basis for the next steps of our discussion.
All right. Well, EH, thank you so much, and all team for a fascinating topic and a very good presentation. Would you like to?
For closing, let me share some of my experience, because many people mentioned about the investors. When I interview investors, as you know, South Korea, we adopt IFRS in 2011, fully adopt. Many people argued that why we should adopt IFRS at the time. And I interviewed some expert actually in M&A practice. He gave us some idea. If we adopt IFRS, we need not make a restatement or finance statement. Because PPE represent faced with their economic failure. So nowadays, when I started this project, I met him again. So I'm happy because we almost, this 2019, we spent IFRS concept almost 10 years. But he mentioned about me, now that the problem is the knowledge intensive company. When he evaluate the Google or Yahoo, or well, in South Korea, Naver is a very famous platform company, he have to use the other data, not financial statement. So we think about what is the usefulness of the financial statement. When we use the financial statement directly, decision making, it is useful. But sometimes investors use the indirectly data or financial statement to make a decision. Even they make a restatement, even they make a different kind of data. So our research team still think about what is the usefulness of finance information. If we provide this information, even though it is not reliability, but they can use it on their view. So we think about what is the usefulness of finance statement. Maybe this comment have your comment, and we keep going this way.
But may I remind you of one of the first articles of conceptual framework, which is the purpose of the financial statements is not to value a company, because we have always known that that would not possibly be the outcome of the balance sheet. All we do is provide information about, give elements that may be useful in for investors to make their estimations of future cash flows. And in many cases, that can simply not be in the financial statements. One of the few industries where market value is lower than book value is the banking industry. And why is that? Because interest rates are so low that there is no way they can make money in the future. And at least it's very difficult. Of course, that cannot be captured adequately in the financial statements, except that you already see now that the net interest margin is under huge pressure. But an investor will have to make assumptions about what are the next 5 years going to bring.
Yeah, so we don't want to measure the firm value using the financial statement. No, we don't want.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, and thank you for coming over all this way. All right, I think that brings us to the end of our meeting, a short meeting this time. Thank you for coming over, nevertheless, and hopefully we'll see many of you tomorrow in Paris, the day after tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, Alexandru, your last meeting.